Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right, hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Hall, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 348 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we are in Mexico, or coming back from Mexico.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, cinco, seis. That's
okay. It. That's so you were singing an offspring song, basically.
Oh, I thought I was doing Sesame Street.
No, I think that was with the cinco, cinco, seis. That's the offspring. He's close, though.
Look at me. That's all you get.
So, anyway, so we don't have a brand new episode. We are playing a Patreon bonus episode that we did a while back. This was in March of 2019, so it's been a while, but it's on the Alamo Street Theater in San Antonio.
Oh, cool.
So it's pretty cool. So I hope you guys will enjoy. Most of you haven't heard this one, so only if you're on the $5 or higher Patreon and you were listening 3 years ago. Or what was that? 5 years ago. So either way. I don't know, three 19? Years ago, something like that.
2021.
I think it was 19, so it was four years ago. Anyways, long story short.
Math is hard.
Hope you enjoy. And we'll be back next week.
Love y'all.
Hey guys, welcome to the March 2023 Patreon bonus episode. It's a week late, but hey, we're doing it. Yeah, sorry about that. Hey guys, and welcome to the March Patreon bonus episode. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy. How the heck are you?
You guys donate money every month, so you probably know who we are.
I'm which expecting. We appreciate very much.
We do. I was kidding around today. Justin Rimmel posted something about a cruise ship or something, or it was a ship that hit something in the water, and they don't know what it was, but it injured a bunch of people. And
it
was like some kind of a sea creature, and they weren't sure. And he said, that's why I don't like the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's going to make it hard when we do the Hillbilly Horror Story in a Mysterious Circumstances cruise. And I said, we can go to the Bahamas. That way we can cruise right through the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, that would be cool. We'd have some stories to tell then, wouldn't we?
Yeah. And then oddly enough, he was on board. Not on board the ship, because we thought.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was on board.
He thought he was really serious.
And then Amy already said, I'm going to start saving my money already. So now people think we're actually doing a cruise.
Oh, geez. They take everything so seriously. That would be cool, though.
We will eventually do a cruise. That would be so nice. It's just a matter of who's going to be a part of it.
You know what? Just as though we could all come out and hang out on the cruise, that would be awesome. Just have a good time. Yeah, heck yeah, it would.
So, I'd actually like to be able to set up a cruise that we actually make it to this time.
Oh, sorry about that. My bad.
So, on this episode, of course, this is the one where we basically do it like a regular episode with stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stories like we don't do the listener stories on this one. We do that on the first of the month show. And I've got a cool story that I had never heard of. I intended on doing something else because I can't keep stuff straight in my head. And I made the comment the other day on one of the shorts that we were going to do a story for on the 411 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then I had another one I was saving for the bonus, not realizing that this week's story, the bonus came out before the 411 episode.
Oh, dang.
So I changed stories. We're going to do that one, but we'll do it next month.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, but anyway, so I found a story today on the San Antonio Alamo Street Theater. I keep wanting to say Alamo because we deal with a company at work called Alamo, and it's Alamo.
Oh, I was going to say, what did you say?
I got Alamo stuck in my head.
Oh.
I almost wrote, every time I wrote Alamo, I almost wrote Alamo. So, it's probably written that way a few times.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I'm hoping when we go down to Florida, Texas, that we make it to San Antonio. But I don't think we're going to be able to. Because it's like 3 or 4 hours away from we're going. And we're going to Galveston, and we're barely going to make it there. So, I don't even know why I said that. Because I know for a fact we can't go down to, where's this place?
I don't know, but you are like all over the damn place. What is up?
It's been a very long week between Kiss concerts and AC/DC tribute bands and working 12, 13 hours a day. Yeah. It's been
looking
a very
too
long
old
week.
For this stuff for real. We can't be doing that concert crap, especially in the middle of the week. Wow. It about killed me. I was like a mush all yesterday. Couldn't even function.
I know when you get home at 2 o'clock in the morning and still have to go to work the next morning.
Yeah, that tough. Was not fun.
Anyways, the Alamo Street Theater is what we're doing this on.
Okay.
And I thought it was a pretty cool story, and I think you guys will enjoy it. The San Antonio River Walk is one of the most awesome places in the U.S., and that's why I want to go there, River. As we had back in 1998, Kentucky won the national championship, and it was down in San Antonio.
Oh.
And everybody was walking around the River Walk, and they were all taking pictures mm-hmm. and sending it back, and it was, like, so awesome. And I was like, man, I really want to go. And I've had it stuck in my head. That was 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
that I would love to go there strictly because of the pictures and stuff I've seen.
Wow, well, that's nice. Maybe one day.
Maybe next year. Because we'll probably do a show in San Antonio next year instead of Houston. Anyway, so the place is cool. It's beautiful and all that stuff. It's also believed by many people to be haunted, the whole Riverwalk area.
The whole thing?
The whole Riverwalk area. And the building that used to house the Alamo Street Theater is one of the buildings that is believed to be haunted, and that's why I picked it for this story. Now, originally, this building was the Alamo Methodist Church, and it was built in 1912. So it's not really that old compared to
most of the places
we talk
about.
This building was used as a church all the way up until 1968. Then it was vacant until 1976, so you had about an 8-year period there where several homeless people made this building kind of their makeshift campsite.
Mm-hmm.
In 1976, things changed when Bill and Marcy Lawson were out on a Sunday. They're just kind of driving around town. They go up by the Riverwalk, and they come across this building. Happened there. But this is real life. And they thought it was beautiful, and they loved the architecture of it. So Bill looks up, and he says, man, that sure would make a dandy place to have a dinner theater.
A what?
A dinner theater.
Oh, I thought you said a dinder. I'm like, what the
I
heck?
Did.
Oh, Lord.
Thank you for pointing it out.
Oh. So, was it me this time? What's wrong?
Nothing.
Sorry, babe.
So anyway, he said it would be a dandy place to have a dinner theater. Now, Marcy gazed lovingly into his eyes and said, what the hell is wrong with you? Have you lost your mind? But persistent speech resistance, and by the end of the night, Bill had Marcy on board with buying this old neglected church. They immediately started renovating the place, and they added a stage up to the chapel area, and they converted the whole lower level into a restaurant and a theater, and they called it the Green Room Dinner Theater.
I guess the homeless people weren't happy about that.
Probably not. My guess is the first steps of the renovation was a get-out sign.
Aww.
So they were able to...
You know what? It would have been nice.
What?
They would be like, you know what? I understand you're homeless, and I hate that you have to go, but hey, why don't you come work for us? They could have offered them jobs.
Well, who said they didn't?
I don't know, but I just thought that. I thought that would be a nice gesture.
That would have been a nice gesture. So, I saw something on Facebook the other day, and it was a company that a homeless guy started, and now he was really successful, and he only hires homeless people.
Good. I think that's amazing.
So, when they did the renovations here, they were able to keep the pressed tin ceilings.
Oh, which I love how that. I love cool.
That look. The new chicken restaurant downtown I was telling you about that opened up.
Yeah.
It's got pressed tin.
I think that is so neat. I wish more places had that, actually.
They've got some of that at Bobby Mackey's.
Oh, where? I don't remember that.
It's when you first walk in. Because remember, they were talking about that was what was left over from the original place back when it was the...
Oh, I have to look at that again.
Yeah, back when the mobsters owned it. So anyways, they got the press tent, and they were able to keep the stained glass.
Nice.
So downstairs, they would play like original-type movies, but it was more like... I guess independent films and stuff like that. So they would play that downstairs, and they served a buffet for people to eat. And upstairs was a little more traditional production type stuff, and it became San Antonio's first nonprofit theater.
Oh, nice.
So it eventually would become something called Kaz Beers at the Church, and then the San Antonio Cafe and Concert Center, but it closed for good in May of 2011. They just wouldn't do it enough to be able to. And it changed hands a couple of times.
Oh, it did.
The original, yeah.
That's a shame.
It sat vacant again for another 3 years. And it opened up as a gourmet hot dog venue that served, was also a bar, and it had live music called Frank.
Oh, I wonder if that guy's wife was mad at him at the end.
Probably not. I think they had success.
Oh.
For the most part. They opened up on March 4th, 2016, so it's only been a couple of years ago when Frank opened up. So the building was the first business in San Antonio to receive the South Texas Ghost Hunters Alliance Officially Haunted Award.
Well, that took a turn.
Well, it did. It did. So why? Well, reportedly, there are over 12 different entities at this location. So we're going to tell you about who some of these entities might very well be. Now, a few of them don't have much info on them, and I thought we would talk about them first. So there's an apparition of a man who tends to show up in turn-of-the-century clothing. He's seen where the church services used to be held in that part of the building. So it's believed that he was a founder of the original Alamo Methodist Church.
Very cool.
Another figure likes to show up late at night, and it's believed that he's a former actor named Al. I don't know how they come to that That's really all I had on Al.
Mm-hmm.
But these next couple, we got plenty of information on. And we're going to start with Little Eddie. He's one of the most active spirits in the building. Eddie is a little boy who likes to turn off and on lights. He likes to move things around and run up and down the aisle of the theater. Eddie's thought to be around 9 or 10 years old. Now, he started showing up shortly after the theater... was acquired an old Victorian-style wicker wheelchair that was like a prop for one of the plays. So it's thought that by many people that he died of polio.
Oh.
Paranormal investigators seem to think that Eddie is very hyper because of the fact that he was probably wheelchair-bound with having polio in real life, and he's free to finally run and play and frolic around in the afterlife.
That's amazing. That makes me happy.
Now, the next spirit is Miss Margaret, and she's the main ghost of the building. Allegedly, this is the spirit of Margaret Gething. Her great-grandfather was an English lord, and she was a very high-society-type young lady who left San Antonio for New York to become an actress. She even helped the Red Cross during World War II, so she was a super nice woman. She had some success in acting in New York. She was even in a Broadway play with Clark Gable.
Ooh, wow.
She eventually came back to San Antonio. She became an interior designer. She also became president of the King William Association, and that was a group that would go around and try to preserve old buildings, kind of like the Alamo Street Theater. So they would find these buildings that were either going to be demolished or they were dilapidated, and they would try to raise the money to get them back to their glory days.
Yeah, well, she had her hand in a lot of things.
She did. So not only does Margaret haunt the former theater, she might be drawn there, as many people think, back because of her acting days. But her seamstress, Henrietta, also haunts the place. So Henrietta usually is seen backstage by the costumes. How fitting.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So sightings of both of them began in 1976, which was just a year after Margaret had passed away. So Margaret passed away in 1975. And 76 is when they bought the building and started renovating.
Oh.
So keep in mind, renovations like this tend to stir up
ghosts, right,
and stuff like that. So you wonder how many of the homeless people living there might have partaken in a little bit of drinking on a regular basis and might have thought and might have seen things and thought that they were just, oh, I was just drinking, so that's what I saw.
Oh, I bet.
So there probably had to be something going on. So the two, which is Margaret and Henrietta, they continue to show up all the way through the changes in ownership and the name changes. Not sure if they are seen today at Frank, but they were definitely seen through all of the other businesses that were there.
She's like, what are these hot dogs they speak of?
Gourmet hot dogs? You're crazy. Eddie and Margaret showed up so much that the theater would actually put on a show several times a year called In the Company of Ghosts, which told stories about all of the ghosts in the theater.
Now look, that would have been an amazing thing if like the real ghost showed up like during the play.
That would be cool.
And people in the audience like, damn, look at them effects, man. That is crazy. How do they pull that off?
Look like the ones off of Scrooge with Bill Murray or something. What, I'd be a taxi driver. So the theater looks at it as a way to pay homage to the ghostly patron.
That's
so
really
that would,
nice.
That actually would really be cool to go see a play in a haunted theater about the ghosts that haunt the theater.
Yeah.
It's really a cool concept when you think about it. So Margie Larson was very protective of the ghost when she owned the theater. She said one time, they are all very friendly and they bother no one. Anyone who tries to come and get rid of these will be thrown out.
You go, Margie.
She would not let anyone in any shape or fashion either harm or disrupt the spirits in her theater.
So, she's a cool chick.
In 2001, there was an incident when a clock inside of a glass case had the pendulum swinging back and forth. Which you think, well, it's no big deal. That's what clocks do. Except this clock hadn't worked in years.
Mm.
So Miss Larson used to tell a story about how on several occasions, her and the staff and customers would see a big serving spoon down in the buffet area rise up off of the steam table and float across the room and just drop in the middle of the table area where the dining tables were. She said there was another instance when she was with saw an elderly lady, and the elderly lady was at the buffet, and she thought, well, she can probably use some help getting back to her table. And she goes over there and she grabs the plate from the young lady. And as they're walking back to the woman's table, the plate was ripped out of her hands by, she said, an unseen force and just thrown to the ground. The plate busted into a million pieces. Now, she swears that she didn't drop the plate and that it was forcefully snatched from her hand.
Well, that was rude. She probably had everything picked out she wanted, too.
Oh, I guarantee. So back in the early 2000s, there was a lady that was celebrating her birthday. And she had a cupcake with a candle in it, you know, like the theater had given her. And just when she was about to blow out the candle and make a wish, the candle pulled itself out of the cupcake and threw itself across the room in front of a bunch of witnesses.
You ain't gonna blow me.
So Marcy Larson says she thinks it was little Eddie's handiwork.
Oh, That's great.
Eddie also pulled a woman's hair one time on occasion with several people watching.
Oh, my gosh. The Eddie, little Eddie, little turd.
Eddie was especially fond of Miss Sotelo. She became the general manager of the building, but she started there as a cook in the kitchen. The first thing she had to do every morning was start cooking bread and muffins that had to be done by noon.
Yeah.
So she would go in and she would turn on the oven. As soon as she would turn around, Eddie would turn the oven off.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't really mind all the time, but it would get frustrating. And she would just basically tell Eddie that, hey, Eddie, you need to cut it out. And she said that most of the time he would actually listen.
Yeah.
And she could actually go out the whole rest of the day without him bothering her for, you know, turning the ovens off or something like that. Now, sometimes she would lean into this giant commercial-sized refrigerator they had to grab, like, an ingredient or something that she needed, and she would feel a slight push as if Eddie was trying to playfully push her in the fridge.
Maybe.
That's what Jack Nicholson thought, too, in The Shining. Miss Sotelo, though, she said she would get extremely frustrated sometimes because these pranks went a little too far and were kind of carried out at the wrong times. She said that, for example, shelves would be completely pulled out of the refrigerator. And that's extremely frustrating when you got to clean up the mess. And,
oh, of course.
And she said she actually has established a rapport with Eddie over the years. And on days that she just isn't really up to his playfulness, she just says, Eddie, can you please leave me alone? I've had a very long day. And he mostly listens to her.
Aw, that's so nice.
So, Miss Sotelo, her first name is Victoria, by the way. I don't think I mentioned that.
No,
Anyway, Miss Sotelo was also had some encounters with Miss Margaret. So, one day, she's just roaming around doing her regular, you know, Miss Sotelo stuff. And she smells a smell that she hadn't smelt before. She knew she'd smelt it, but she hadn't smelt it there.
Mm-hmm.
She just couldn't place it. And she said she would never forget this odor. It smelled like it was rose water of some sort. Something that she said that you would have smelt from somebody a very long time ago or a very elderly woman.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, but she said she'd never smelt it here before. And she said she just started kind of walking around trying to find it. And she followed the smell all the way up to the theater. And then she said it got extremely strong there, but there was nobody there and hadn't been anybody up there. So she assumes that that was Miss Margaret.
Whoa.
Tom Nagy, who used to work at the theater, he says that everyone there knows that the building's haunted. All past and current employees, they just know it. He says the first thing that a customer usually says when they come into the theater is that they want to see Miss Margaret. I like how people just assume that you can just pull a ghost out of your ass or something. I mean, how are you just going to go up and request to see a ghost? You know what I'm saying?
That's pretty wild.
I'm pretty sure if he could just produce a ghost and everyone wanted to, he'd be rich and wouldn't be working at the
theater.
Yeah,
for sure.
So the rap on Miss Margaret is that she's got a very low tolerance for people with bad theater etiquette.
Mm.
So people at the theater that are usually rude and talking during the show have heard a loud shh from behind them. When they turn around to look to see who's complaining or maybe to kind of bitch at somebody for complaining, most cases there is nobody behind them.
You could have used her at your comedy shows.
Yeah.
You know it?
I'm telling you. Because nothing like a drunk in the crowd.
Yeah, Lord, I know it.
Brian Cobb, he's the former director of the building, and he's had a few memorable encounters with Miss Margaret. He said one time he was in the audience. This was during a rehearsal, and some of the actors were kind of going over their lines. And he hears a whisper, Brian, oh, Brian. And he adamantly says, first of all, that he did not imagine this before he even gets into the story. He said he looked around and he couldn't see anybody, but he heard it. He turned back around and he hears it again. And he said this happened like three times. That's why he knows he didn't imagine.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about it, that's kind of rude because she gets on people for talking.
And then
he's
true.
Up there and she does the same thing.
Yeah.
Somebody's a hypocrite.
Yeah, totally.
Cobb's partner at the theater, he had a run-in with Margaret as well. He said it was late one night. He hears a woman yell, "Help me, help me." And he just assumes it was her.
Mm-hmm.
There's another instance when during a non-musical play, a woman could be heard singing from the audience and nobody could find where it was coming from. Everybody was looking around and they're like, "What?" So everybody could hear it, but nobody could find it. And apparently, she wasn't a very good singer. So everybody pointed out that not only was she singing and singing loud, but she was very pitchy and Simon Cowell.
I wonder why she was. Oh yeah, I wonder why she was saying, "Help me, help me."
I don't know.
See, she.
I don't know why they would think that would be Margaret when she's never asking for help.
That's true. She can't cry wolf too many times.
Then you got people who've taken a bunch of pictures there, and she likes to show up there, and some of the other ones show up there. There's pictures of orbs in the hallways outside of the theater entrance. Pretty normal occurrence mm-hmm. for anybody taking pictures out there. The most famous picture, though, was taken in 1990. Marcy Larson has a fun story about this picture. She said Barbara and Edward Kurtz were visiting from Florida, and they were eating at the buffet. Barbara said that she was somewhat of a psychic, and she told Marcy that she had a funny feeling about the building and asked if she could visit the theater upstairs. Now, you got to keep in mind something about the time here. This was during the middle of summer in Texas.
Oh, good. Yeah, real hot.
The air conditioner was broken, so it was extremely hot upstairs, and she told them that. And they said, "Hey, we're from Florida. Trust me, we're used to the heat. No big deal." So they got to the top of the stairs, and it was smoldering hot. Within minutes, the temperature began to drop dramatically. And I mean to the point where they started to shiver. Barbara said that she felt a presence, and they took out a Polaroid camera and took a picture of the entryway. When the picture developed, and I'm not sure if they shook it or not. I don't know if they, you know, like...
Outcast. Oh, you're dumb.
Well, I know you were going to ask, so I figured. So when the picture developed, there was a lady in a white dress. It's believed to be Miss Margaret. And Miss Larson kept the picture at the restaurant for everybody to see the whole time that they had the place.
Well, that is awesome.
I bet it wasn't the original picture, because if I had a Polaroid picture of a ghost, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be giving it to anybody. So they might maybe made a photocopy of it or something. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah,
that's true.
But anyway, the picture was displayed the whole time that they owned the bar. They were very proud of the fact that picture was taken in their place.
They were probably enjoying that little cold burst if it was so hot out
there. Oh, I would think so. Or maybe the air conditioner all of a sudden started working again.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't cool off that dang fast.
All right, so that's the story on the Alamo Street Theater.
That is so interesting. I would love to go there for now.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Now, we'd have to go there. We'd have to eat
a hot dog.
Or they have a hot dog buffet, which is nothing but sausages and stuff.
Oh, that just sounds disgusting for some reason.
It kind of does when you think
about
it.
All them dang wieners laying around everywhere.
Yeah, and I know you got a problem with wieners laying around everywhere. So I thought I would have a little giggle. So I thought when I was covering this story, there was another theater that had a little bit of a haunting. It's not much of a story,
mm-hmm.
but since we're on the subject and talking about San Antonio theaters, I thought it would be worth mentioning. There's an Alamo Quarry Theater, because when I'm looking at Alamo Street Theater, Alamo Quarry Theater came up.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, it's an actual movie theater that's owned by Regal, just like the ones we go to up here. The story on this one, though, is it was built over top of a cement factory. No, back used to be a cement factory, and it's gone, and I guess they used the area. So for decades, there's been rumors about bodies being trapped in the foundation, causing restless spirits in there.
Oh, wow.
So the staff reports numerous cold spots on the second floor on both sides of the theater, and at night they've witnessed the auditorium lights slowly dim, like, you know, when a movie's getting ready to start. And then it'll come back on brighter than it was before, and it'll just keep doing that until everybody has left the building. So at the end of the night, it'll eventually stop, but it waits until everybody's gone. This is like after it's closed.
Oh.
So like when they're cleaning up and stuff like that, that'll happen. And then they say that in the projection room, there's an image of a child mm-hmm. in there that appears. So that's the stories from that.
Well, I'll be dang.
So anyways, that's all I had on the story of the San Antonio theaters.
Very interesting.
So now what are we going to do?
I don't know.
I guess we could tell another little story. I guess we could talk about Sawyer's Castle, which is in Kansas City, Kansas, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from where we're going to be in Atchison.
Oh, groovy.
So Sawyer's Castle, it's like this giant three-story 18th century style German Gothic type brick mansion. Okay, so it was built by this German businessman, entrepreneur, Anton Philip Sawyer, which thus the term Sawyer's Castle. And he built this for his wife, Marie, and their five daughters. It's got this big old tall watchtower and a walkway on the roof, so it's pretty damn cool.
It sounds awesome.
The double French doors are huge. They're like 10 feet wide and 10 feet high and 6 inches thick.
What? How in the world did they get those doors up in there?
It's huge.
Good grief.
So the inside was beautiful at one point. 12-foot tall ceilings and that beautiful entry floor that we were just talking about where you come in at. It alternates oak and walnut wood. So this place it's pretty top-notch. There's a 4-story staircase. I said staircase. Staircase.
Mm-hmm.
4-story staircase. And it kind of connects the floors, the attic, and the tower all together. The first floor rooms have marble fireplaces and imported chandeliers to provide the light. Now, the current owners, a descendant of the family who built it, and they bought it with the best of intentions back in the 80s. They were going to restore it and renovate the mansion, but they found it was a lot harder to do than what they thought it was going to be. And he faced a bunch of problems, such as a dishonest employee. There was a caretaker that he bought there that he caught red-handed stealing $30,000 worth of stuff from the mansion in 1996.
Wow. I mean, the place sounds amazing.
Well, it does, and it's got a spooky appearance. And being a mansion with a spooky appearance with nobody living there, it's attracted a lot of vandals, people breaking in, just kind of look around. So this has been a real problem. And keeping a caretaker employed there has also been a challenge because the caretaker had his hands full keeping people just off the property alone.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
And then there was an 8-foot mother of all fences, which surrounds the property, was installed, and that was a big help in slowing down the trespasser. So it took a little bit of time, but I guess they figured, hey, put up a fence, it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it took so long to put up a fence.
Yeah, that's...
Well, they probably just didn't want to ruin the look of the place.
Yeah.
In 2000, the owner did some basic repairs to the mansion structure, and the front porch was stabilized so it wouldn't fall on the rest of the house, because you know how crappy that can be. But he replaced the mortar between the bricks and repaired the balconies and replaced the windows that had been broken out by vandals. And then now there's a sign out in the front yard that says it's a historical landmark and it's being renovated and restored. So it sounds like they're on the right path.
Well, good.
It's a shame, though, apparently the owner doesn't live in Kansas City, because if he did, it would be easier for him to spend some spare time there fixing up the place. And he could also provide an opportunity to be on site frequently to develop a little better working relationship with the city authorities.
Where the heck he live?
Well, I think he lived... I don't remember, to be honest with you, because I think I get my stories mixed up. I thought he lived in Philadelphia, but I'm probably wrong. Let me go back to my notes here. It seems like the city authorities are kind of pissed off because he's made very slow progress in renovating this mansion in the 11 years that he's owned it. So, you know, that's kind of the problem. They want it done, and because it's not an eyesore.
Yeah,
and he's taking
his
own sweet time with it. So the Kansas City Landmarks Commission currently scrutinizes every improvement he does manage to make on the mansion to be sure that it's authentic to the style and time period of the mansion, which was declared a historical landmark in 1977. So they're pretty much dictating what he can do and how he needs to do it. So we know the place is haunted. Who's it haunted by? Here's some possible candidates. Throughout the years, keep in mind there was 5 generations of the Sawyer family who lived and died in this family mansion. So besides Anton's death, his wife, Mary, also died in the mansion in 1919, as well as other family members throughout the years from natural and unnatural causes. There was 1 suicide, 1 infant death, 1 child drowned in a swimming pool, and Anton's son, Julius, was killed in a train accident, burned to death.
Oh, my.
That's not on the property, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wonder what the heck. What did he, the train crash or something?
I guess. So occurrences which didn't happen but have circulated over the years as truth
despite the stories being circulated about the mansion, there were no murders, no bodies were buried here, and there was no treasure that existed. There's no secret tunnel, as the hill that the mansion stands on is a solid rock. The suicide which happened here was an old man who was the second husband of one of the descendants. He killed himself with a gun because he was upset about his declining health. No woman hung herself in the lookout tower, as some people theorize by popular thought. So a lot of true things that happened here, and a lot of just rumors and stuff like that. I guess because the place looks so damn spooky, you just got to make up stories about it. Another legend commonly reported tells this tragic tale. That at the end of the Civil War, there was a woman, supposedly it was Miss Sawyer, who lived in a mansion, and she went to wait on the docks for her husband. He came home on the ferry, which, you know, he said that he would be on and when his service was over from the war. And when he didn't show up, she went home and killed herself, thinking he had been killed. He had merely just missed the boat.
What the hell, people?
Some people just jumped the gun.
I mean, seriously.
When he arrived home and found her dead, he in turn killed himself. The original teller of this tale had read Romeo and Juliet way too many times, I'm guessing. But anyway, that's proven not to be true. Besides that, the land belonged to an Indian in 1859, Tom Big Knife, during his time period, and the land was basically just an undeveloped property. So the Sawyers didn't even come to Kansas City until 1968. So throughout the years, neighbors in the community have reported some eyewitness paranormal occurrences. Lights appear at the lookout tower, and they can be kind of seen floating around the property as a whole. Laughter, crying, shouting have all been heard coming from the house when no one was living there. Doors opening and closing by themselves has also been reported. Now, there is an apparition of a woman that's seen standing and kind of walking around the widow's walk, as they call it, and standing in the lookout tower. Now, this apparition could be any of the Sawyer women who lived there, because there were so many, with five generations. Now, supposedly on Halloween, two apparitions, there's one of a man and one of a woman, are seen dancing in the lookout tower. Well, that's romantic. Perhaps these spirits could be Eve and John Perkins, who was the one who shot himself here. So an apparition of a little boy has also been seen at the mansion. Perhaps this is Julius appearing to the living as the boy he was when he lived here, a place he probably loved. And then there's a wide variety of ghostly manifestations that have been reported by folks who kind of have owned the property over the years. Perhaps one of the reasons that the caretakers haven't stayed for so long is the former residents from the last century still walk around on the property and keep an eye on the living. And you could imagine if you lived in a house all alone as a caretaker, you might be spooked off by something like that.
I don't think I could do that. Live there by myself.
So there must have been some type of reasons why the Jones family sold the mansion after living in it for just a short time. And we didn't really talk about the Jones family a whole lot, but Cindy Jones was not faint-hearted. She owned the house for a little bit. She always carried a little small gun with her in her case, and she bumped into, in case somebody was a trespasser or something like that. She was prepared to handle any problems at all with any outside people when she inherited the mansion, so she knew there was going to be some headaches that went along with it. However, she found that handling the paranormal activities in this house was way harder than handling the living. So Cindy had heard some strange noises, and she felt a range of emotions, I guess, when you hear something like that. She was either feeling uneasy, and sometimes she was just flat terrified. So she knew that she wasn't alone, even though she was the only living person in the house. She didn't like sharing the mansion with unseen residents, probably because they didn't pay rent. Cindy Jones, while in the attic of the lookout turret, she heard some noises, and she couldn't really explain that they were natural noises because she hadn't heard them. And then she heard Cliff, which was her husband, check it out, and there was nobody there. So Cindy then went, and she said that the fireplace covers would rattle hard all by themselves. And she heard strange melodic singing noise. So her father-in-law, he had some paranormal experiences there. He said they weren't easily explained either. For instance, while Cindy was preparing for some friend's wedding on an outside affair, her father-in-law was busy taking down some old ceiling and doing some renewal work in the library. So the ceiling was bad and needed to be replaced. And suddenly, in the form of a wedding picture of one of the Sawyer's great-granddaughters, just kind of fluttered to the ground. Not fell, fluttered.
So like a feather?
Like a feather. This relative had died in 1967 on the same day as this wedding.
Whoa.
So when the Jones family...
So she was a wedding crasher?
I guess. Literally, her picture was crashing to the ground. So when the Jones family had owned the mansion, there was a bunch of psychics that came into the mansion to kind of investigate. But without any kind of modern equipment that, you know, they use today, it was kind of hard to find anything. But they did feel like that, at least judging just by from their own psychic ability, that the attic was the center of the hauntings. And the Kansas City psychic, Maurice Schwamm, who's apparently well known in that area, he came and he looked at some evidence from some photos, and he says that it shows the evidence of spirits by some of the pictures he took. Becky Ray, she's a paranormal activity investigator, and she hasn't made up her mind yet. She said these occurrences are figments of imagination inspired by the spooky atmosphere and not anything real. Now, the result of natural phenomenon or, you know, if the reported apparitions or paranormal occurrences are real, she's not really sure. She's continuing her ongoing investigation. She's always trying to get permission to go inside the mansion to either prove the hauntings with some data or disprove them with the data either way. But she thinks that she can find a way to prove or disprove them. And I think the owners would really like this, because if you could just debunk most of this stuff, it would probably cut down on all these unauthorized visitors and vandals and throwing rocks and doing all the damage place, and probably give the caretaker some peace.
Yeah. I don't know what the point of people doing that crap for is. It's Jesus. Get a life already.
So the bottom line is it still haunted? It appears so, because personal eyewitness accounts, the work of psychics done over 20 years ago, it's quite possible that restless spirits still kind of claim this mansion as the home. So plenty of drama happened here, which can create hauntings, and perhaps some of the legends were made up, but there's a bunch of paranormal activity that actually did happen and people saw. So, whatever the case, that's the Sawyer Castle in Kansas City.
Well?
Let me guess. I don't know what to say about that.
No, my head itches.
Oh. Ninja, don't be trying to chime in at the end. So, guys, thank you so much. That was this week's... Or I suggest I should say this month's bonus episode.
Yeah. This month is flying by. It's ridiculous.
So, but we love you. We appreciate you. And remember, this Saturday we've got a special guest in the house.
Oh, yeah. Remember that.
Yeah, hope David Flora from Blurry Photos will be with us. So, and we're going to do the actual real story on the 411. And I've got that about 90% written. And it's pretty awesome.
Good. I can't wait for that.
It's pretty captivating. So, we love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys.